Hello and welcome to Sybil's Book Club. This is Sybil Wilkes from the Tom Joyner Morning Show, and it is a distinct honor to welcome our guest this day to Sybil's Book Club. It is a true honor to talk to Professor Anita Hill and talk about her new book, Reimagining Equality, Stories of Gender, Race, and Finding Home. Welcome, Professor Hill.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Wilkes. It's a pleasure to be talking with you, and I'm looking forward to talking about the book and just visiting with you about what's going on in the world.
Well, I appreciate that because you really want people to know that I'm extremely excited, and I dare say a bit nervous in talking to you because you've had such a profound impact on my life. And it all started on October 11th, 1991, where we saw that you came before the Judiciary Committee on Capitol Hill and talked before the committee and gave your testimony regarding a person who was being judged for the United States Supreme Court. And, of course, that was Clarence Thomas. And now, 20 years later, we're still talking about some of the same things that you were talking about and the light that you shed over these last 20 years. And your book, Reimagining Equality, Stories of Gender, Race, and Finding Home. Where did the title come from?
Well, it occurred to me as I looked at the issues that we're confronting today with the foreclosure crisis, in particular, and so many people, millions of people really leaving their homes under duress, many people struggling to stay in their homes, people moving, migrating from areas in the north where their families had gone generations before, looking for opportunities, now moving back to southern cities. It occurred to me that the home has played this significant role in how we think about equality.
Mm.
And that it seems that at every generation, whether it's my great-grandparents' generation, to even my parents' generation when we went through the Civil Rights era, and now in this quote-unquote post-race era, every generation is really having to think about what equality means for it.
Mm.
And we're reimagining it for the new day because, unfortunately, the ideas that we had in the past has not, in fact, created equality for us. The ideas that we thought were going to work, that if we just got civil rights, then that would be enough,
mm-hmm.
that would equate with our own justice, sense of justice. And now we're saying, I'm saying we have to think about what it means for today, especially in light of the foreclosure crisis and the collapse of so many African-American neighborhoods.
We're talking to Professor Anita Hill and her book, Reimagining Equality. And Professor Hill, the way you have set the book up, which I think is wonderful, and talking about things that that so many of us can identify with, how did you choose the stories that you told from talking about A Raisin in the Sun and that story, which went on to Broadway, but had such a profound effect on the playwright Lorraine Hansberry, and then talking about, and not only her story obviously is a real life story, and she went on to write about it in a way, but also talking about real life stories of women in this country, and how did you choose them, and how did you decide to do that?
One of the things that I think we miss when we try to figure out how do we move to the next step,
mm-hmm.
we miss a lot of people's stories. I picked women who were struggling to not only find a home, but to be able to shape it, to secure it for their families. Stories not of people who were famous necessarily or wealthy, but those of us who are really struggling and trying to make those homes and who are living with some disadvantages. And I picked them because there are ways that we can make their struggles easier. But I also picked them because they are stories of hope. They show us our potential for equality and all of the challenges that they meet, and some they move beyond. All of those things are important for us to consider. They're the real-life dramas, if you will, the reality shows, I say, on paper for how we can move forward in 2011. And I chose them because perhaps they're stories that we miss. As opposed to the stories that we love. We love those great stories about people who overcome the odds and they go off and they become very wealthy.
The triumph.
And I think that's, there's more to it than that. The reality of many experiences gets lost when we just focus on those exceptions.
You tell your story, which I find just fascinating. You were the youngest child of 13?
Right.
And growing up in Oklahoma, so you share your story as well. Can you give people a bit of an idea about your family? Because you talk about your mom and your dad, but not only your immediate family, but your family history and how you all got to where your parents raised you and your brothers and sisters.
Well, one of the things that I say is that with my grandparents, my grandfather, William Henry Elliott, and my grandmother, Ida Crooks Elliott, well, in particular, my grandfather went from being property as a slave to owning property.
Yes.
And 80 acres that he homesteaded. And it was government policies, of course, that allowed that to happen. And so it seemed to me that as we figure out how we're going to get homes, that government policies have always played a role, either in allowing us to secure our homes or keeping us from getting our homes in terms of restrictive covenants that were enforced, all kinds of redlining that the government participated in. So I try to weave my own family story into saying the government can play an important role in helping us. And I know it's true because it was true of my grandparents. In my own family situation, moving then to my parents, they raised us, 13 children, all 13 children of us. And some of my siblings, they're all older. Some of them grew up in intense segregation in Oklahoma. But nevertheless, after Brown versus the Board of Education and as the law started to change, the family story also started to change. We stayed in the same place, but many more opportunities opened up for my younger siblings and myself. And I, in writing this book, what I want people to see is that, or to know, is that, you know, these are a collection of stories. This is not a whole lot of, oh, I'm going to give you the breakdown of this case and that policy. This is really a book that is centered on the stories of people. And I introduce them to the policies because I think it's important that people know that we think we get to where we are and only by our own bootstraps. But in fact, there are a lot of things that are at play. They have been at play in my family story. They've no doubt been in play in a lot of family stories. And until we can connect the stories to the policies, we're missing part of the picture. And so I try to bring in how the change in the law changed my family. And I do that through several generations, from my great-grandmother, who was a single mother raising a son early on during slavery, or at the latter part of slavery, but then moved on to establish a family, and then my grandfather, who homesteaded this property, my parents, who raised their children on a farm in Oklahoma, and then to me, now living in Massachusetts and able to live out many of my dreams because of the changes that law and policies have put into place.
And you weave it so beautifully in terms of bringing the policy and connecting the dots for many of us in terms of history and what policy has done and how it has changed over the years to the detriment of some and to the benefit to others. We're talking to Professor Anita Hill, and her book is Reimagining Equality, Stories of Gender, Race, and Finding Home. And I didn't want to cut you off, but I just wanted to reintroduce you there.
Well, and I don't want to say to people, let's leave it at that. I've made it, and so it's all over.
Mm-hmm.
Because now what we're looking at is a current situation where so many of the gains that we have made are at risk. I heard yesterday from a woman. She and her husband had built their dream home as an African-American woman. They had built their dream home. They had great jobs. And then the foreclosure crisis hit, and her husband lost his job, and they lost their home. Fortunately, you know, their children have been able to go to college, finish college. But we are at a crucial point now. These stories I'm hearing over and over again from various different women in different and men in different positions. And we must pay attention to the issues of today. We can't simply assume that we are going to be able to ride out the storm and move ahead on the trajectory toward equality without some attention to the policies that need to be addressed to get us there.
Do you think that many of us who have not been affected by the foreclosure, the subprime mortgage issues and all of this, that we are just burying our heads in the sand and not dealing with the real and understanding that this could happen to any one of us?
Well, I think we are trying to ignore the problem. But I think it's just impossible. When you look at certain cities like Chicago, Detroit, Baltimore, Memphis, Tennessee, where entire neighborhoods have been devastated, it's going to have an impact on all of us, whether or not it has that personal impact, whether you've lost your home. When neighborhoods are decimated, you are impacted. And so we can't simply say, well, I personally escaped, therefore I'm okay. We are impacted. And in fact, the crisis actually brought down the entire financial system. Even though you may still be in your home, I will tell you, I would bet that the value of your home has declined.
Oh, yeah.
So you have been impacted.
Yeah.
And to me, the greater impact, one that we're really ignoring, is what impact is this going to have on a generation?
Generational impact, exactly. Yeah.
And that's why I, you know, bring back the stories of my grandparents and great-grandparents, because, in fact, their efforts and the things that they were able to do has really enabled me to be where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see this as something that is not going to go away for us individually or for us collectively unless we pay attention now and in the future.
The author of Reimagining Equality is Anita Hill, and this is a book which weaves together the stories of gender, race, and finding home. And as I was saying to you before we started the conversation, Professor, is that I think this is going to do wonders for a lot of us that read this now, because I'm already thinking in the back of my head about conversations that I will have with my family over the holidays when we'll get together.
And I would love for people not only to have those conversations and share this book with their families. I was talking, one woman told me her mother came here from Haiti. She was displaced because of the politics of Haiti, moved to the U.S., and now she is fearing a displacement again because she's just hanging on to being able to hold her home.
Mm.
Those kinds of stories, she told me she's going to discuss it with her family at Thanksgiving. So I hope this will be a book that people look at, they read, they talk about and discuss. And I honestly believe that that is the beginning of change, that's where we will start to get engaged and start to move our institutions, our political institutions, our churches, our businesses, to really think about the decisions that need to be made in the future to move us forward.
And I really think that the women are behind the force behind all of this, because I think about, and I'm not taking anything away from men, but I think that home and what it means to so many of us as women will guide us towards trying to save not only our homes, but helping others in this cause.
I think this will resonate. I hope it will resonate with men, but I will confess that many of the people I've heard from have been women, and this topic does resonate with them, because we've struggled not only because African Americans have struggled with lending discrimination, with redlining, and now what we call reverse redlining during the subprime crisis, but women have struggled on their own just to be able to own a home in their own name. That history is still being visited upon us. So I hope this will resonate with men as well, but I certainly do hope and believe that it will resonate with women. And I have great confidence that women can move us forward. You mentioned 1991. The reason that we have made any advances against sexual harassment is that women said, this is wrong, and I'm going to stand up against it. And so I'm a great believer in our power to instigate positive change.
Well, you certainly have done that, and as I said in the intro, on October 11th, and I remember the day of watching you as you gave your testimony before the Judiciary Committee, and all that that has changed and yet has not changed. As you reflect back on these 20 years, what do you think about the progress as well as the lack of progress as we talk about gender and race?
I am fairly thankful for the progress, and as I said, I can thank women who stood up and said, we will not be putting up with this again. We are going to move forward, but I also know that not enough has been done, that sexual harassment still exists, and that there are situations where employees cannot come forward. There are situations where young girls now, in particular, are facing rampant harassment, overt harassment, and sexual extortion in the workplace. And so we still have to work at it. We still have to push. And we have to imagine equality really from the perspective of the people who have not found their voices. So that we have to give them ways to exert their own rights. And that's really why I wrote this book. That's why I continue to work on issues of gender and racial equality. And it's been 20 years since the hearings. I think I have at least another good 20 years of life and career, and I intend to use those years to continue to push the issues forward.
Professor Anita Hill, you are a professor at Brandeis, and you a part of your specialty is women's studies, social policy, law, all
right.
of those together?
And I try to combine every one of those in reimagining equality, because I look at equality really from the point of a holistic point of view. It's policies, it's law, it's just how we live, and all of those things try to incorporate in this book, as well as to tell the stories of people who are out there trying to achieve it, working with it every day in their lives. And so it for me is a start of a conversation, not a conversation ending.
Let me ask you this, if I may, about the young woman that did appear 20 years ago on Capitol Hill and talked before the Judiciary Committee. Do you remember that moment where you said to yourself, I have to say something, I have to speak out, and what propelled you even beyond saying I have to propel you to go before them and to speak your truth?
Oh, boy. I do remember her. I do remember exactly why I felt it important to come forward. And people have maybe misunderstood that. And I'll say it one more time. For me, the reason that I came forward was that the Supreme Court was at stake. And I know how important the laws that are made by the Supreme Court are and have been over our history. So for me, it was about the integrity of the court. And the integrity of the court is only as good as the integrity of the individuals who sit on the court. So what I had to say, my testimony really went directly to the integrity of an individual who was going to be passing judgment on the rights of all of us for the rest of his lifetime. And I wanted the committee to know that here was an individual who had no respect for the law that he was charged with enforcing. You will recall that when I worked for Clarence Thomas, he was the head of the EEOC, and the EEOC was charged with enforcing laws against sexual harassment.
Exactly.
And still is.
Right.
And so for me, it was about the court. It was about the integrity of the court and the competence and integrity of the individual, the nominee, Clarence Thomas, to sit in a lifetime appointment on the highest court in the country. Now, ultimately, the issue of sexual harassment became the unintended consequences. Our reaction to it was perhaps unintended consequence of the testimony. I was not raising a sexual harassment complaint. And people say, well, you know, you didn't prove your complaint. The point of my testimony was to prove that the individual had that Clarence Thomas really disregarded the law
that he was sworn to
uphold. Post.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if I had been filing a sexual harassment complaint, it would not have been in that form.
Of course.
So there is some confusion out there that it's worth clearing up. So the only question I think people should think about as they look back on that time was, did I give them evidence of how Clarence Thomas would judge, what kind of judge he would be?
He would be, right.
And I think if you ask yourself that question, then you have to conclude that I gave very critical and important evidence about the kind of judge Clarence Thomas was going to be. And he's proven to be that kind of judge that puts himself outside of the realm of the laws that he has vowed to enforce.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, as you look on what your role was in this, were you surprised because what you did and the way that you went about bringing about questions about his abilities? Were you surprised when you got this voicemail? Was it last year from his wife asking you to apologize?
You know, I was surprised. I didn't even believe it was her. I thought it was a prank, you know. And eventually it did go to the campus police. I sent it to campus police to find out who it was, what was going on, rather than wonder if every day or every week or every month I was going to be getting another call. I sent it to find out, to sort of get to the bottom of it. We did that, and when the story broke in the press, and trust me, I shared it with a lot of different people because I wanted to know, you know, kind of figure out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
When the story broke, what I realized, though, was I started getting all of these emails from women who were appalled, women and men who were appalled, And I realized that the issue is still resonating with people.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the last few weeks, there have been events at Georgetown Law School, Hunter College. There was an event in Columbia, South Carolina. Hunter's in New York. Georgetown is in Washington, D.C. I was in Columbia, South Carolina with a group of women. We are still moving the issue forward. You ask if I'm satisfied with where we are. No, I'm not satisfied until we really put an end to the practice in the workplace. But am I convinced that people still care about it and that they're willing to continue to work on it? Absolutely. And that is really what came out of, interestingly, came out of that call that came to me a year or so ago.
What about the talk now about a current political figure running for the Republican nomination, Herman Cain, and the talk about women who had settled some sexual harassment cases against him? Not surprising, obviously, but what about the response to it and how people both inside of his organization and outside are responding to it?
Well, you know, to me, this is an incomplete story because we have not heard from the women themselves. And so I can't really comment on it.
I understand.
What I try to do is comment on things that really are complete and to try to help women find their voices. I'm glad there's interest, but I think we all need to hear from either those women, or we need to be able to hear from other people other than Herman McCain.
Yeah.
Herman Cain. But Cain.
How about as now as professor at Brandeis, and you've obviously worked at other institutions, do you like what you do? Do you like where you are in your life?
Yes,
you
I do. I write in the book that I've found a home in Massachusetts, but it's an intellectual home here at Brandeis that allows me to pursue the issues that I care about and to pursue them in the issue of equality in a very much holistic way, not simply looking at the law, but looking at the way people live as well and looking at policy. I feel good about where I am, and what I've realized that is that home is as much about a state of being as it is about a place and location. And I am feeling so blessed that I am at that state of being at home.
When did you realize that you were at that state of being?
Oh, I don't know. I think I probably didn't realize it until I started working through the material in this book. And that was something that was helpful to me personally.
Because I talk to myself a lot, but I talked to myself a lot while I was reading your book. And I think there's some things in here that resonated with me. I grew up on the south side of Chicago. My mom and dad were public servants. My dad was a Chicago fireman, and my mom was a Chicago public school teacher. And I think about them struggling to buy their home on the south side of Chicago in a neighborhood which was heavily white population at the time. And then when my father died and my mother was determined to hold on to the house and all of these things. And now both my parents are deceased, but I still have that house. I have a house where I work now, but I still have a house in my hometown, the house I grew up in. And for some reason, that pull to home, and even though many of my relatives are gone, and as I said, my parents are, there's something about the pull to that structure that has really resonated with me, especially now after reading Reimagining Equality.
Well, I say that home for my parents and probably for yours was this place where we can start to build on our dreams for ourselves and our children.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that that's what happened within those four walls. So it was more than just the structure. It was all the aspirations that your parents had for you.
Right.
The place where they could provide some safety and security and begin to instill in you the things that you are going to need to survive in the world, all of the values that you would need and the work ethic that you would need to be able to be successful in your life. And they were right.
You're right.
Look what you have done.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and it came from that place. From the place came this state of being, of being at home. And what I say ultimately is that home is that safe lens from which we can view the world and view ourselves as part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place where your ideas and experiences and who you are seen as valuable and welcome. And that is what I think we're all looking for, whether we're parents or grandparents. That's what we're looking for the next generation. And I don't know your parents, but I think it's safe to say that's what they were looking for you.
I think that generation spoke a lot to that. Yes, absolutely. And generations previous to that.
And
yes.
So how do we do that? How do we continue that? How do we, how does our generation or my generation and your generation continue that? How do we continue to provide that safe space for our own children,
mm-hmm.
but also make sure that it is created for other children, as opposed to saying, well, we'll just move out of those communities and leave the rest of it to those, and the people who can't afford to move out, you know, they're just kind of on their own.
Right, right, right. I agree.
So.
I'm telling you, it has started a number of conversations in my head, and I thank you, Anita Hill, for this conversation today, talking about your book, Reimagining Equality, Stories of Gender, Race, and Finding Home. I can't tell you how much I enjoy talking to you and what a strong figure you have been in my life over the last 20 years and for standing up and for bringing light to the issues that are so important to us. And now, as you weave all of these things in terms of policy and the stories and bringing it to light in terms of our current history and situation, it really is a really great work. And I salute you and I thank you for this.
Well, and thank you for letting me have this time to talk to your listeners.
Well, we appreciate you, and I look forward to meeting you one day. I've never had the opportunity, but I look forward to it because, as I said, you stand as a very tall figure and appreciate what you continue to do. And your students and your coworkers are very lucky indeed to have you as a strong voice.
And I feel the same way about your co-workers with you. And we know what I mean.
Yes, ma'am, we do. Thank you so much. It has been a great pleasure talking to Anita Hill, author of Reimagining Equality, Stories of Gender, Race, and Finding Home. And yes, she does know my pain. You're listening to Sybil's Book Club here on Black America.